Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Kimberly Johnson to the broadcast. Kimberly is the Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer of Fannie Mae. As COO, she's responsible for overseeing the company's technology, operations, innovation, data, and strategic execution functions. Over the past dozen years, she's held a variety of executive roles at Fannie Mae, including Chief Risk Officer and Chief Credit Officer. Prior to Fannie Mae, she was a director at Credit Suisse. Kimberly received an undergraduate degree in economics from Princeton University and an MBA from Columbia University, and serves as a director on the board at Calvert Impact Capital. In this interview, Kimberly shares her belief that Fannie Mae's new mission, its focus on operational risk and cybersecurity, the company's tremendous data and predictive analytics, and the innovation efforts have the company on a strong footing. We also discuss how Kimberly made the jump from CCO to CRO to COO, and her advice for rising female executives, among other topics. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you give us a rating on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. Thank you. The Forum on World Class IT is brought to you by Transmit Security. Transmit Security designs and develops platforms that address problems in security and usability by making it easy for developers to implement advanced authentication techniques, ranging from biometrics to behavioral profiling. As the risk of cyber attacks and hacks increase, companies need a more effective way of preventing unauthorized access. I recently caught up with the Transmit Security CEO, Mickey Budai. This week, Mickey highlights the tremendous upside to developing a network of expert advisors in various areas of technology and the surprising willingness of top experts to provide free advice.
The third advice is around advisors. The CEO and the CIO of HSBC have built a board of technology advisors consisting of market experts in various fields of technology. This is a brilliant idea. You'd be amazed how many top experts are willing to share their knowledge and provide free advice. There is absolutely nothing for you to lose here and so much to gain. You can take the advice, you can reject the advice, you can have a think about it, but once you put a bunch of smart and experienced industry experts in a room and just brainstorm, you can validate or invalidate your directions and open your mind to other views as well.
Tune in next week when Mickey discusses partnering with startups. It's so great to speak with you this morning.
Thank you for coming. I'm really happy to be joining.
Wonderful. So I thought we would begin, Kimberly, with your current role. You are the Chief Operating Officer of Fannie Mae. You have been since March of 2018. And I wonder, you know, different COOs have different sets of responsibilities. I'd love to hear about what yours are. What is your purview?
Oh, thank you, Peter. I am the COO role that our CEO, Tim Yap, has put together for me is actually a really interesting combination of functions, because we have our technology, our operations, our data, analytics, and models, together with some innovation, and also some sort of strategic execution functions. So it's a really nice way of stringing together a full array of the functionality that we need to enable the business.
That's wonderful. And I'm curious, was there a predecessor in role? Was this a set of responsibilities that were brought together for the first time in the role created for you? How was that done?
We've definitely had COOs before at Fannie Mae, but this was a different configuration, really designed to help enable the innovation that we're trying to start. We've got a lot of things going on in the company in terms of our digital strategy, and we wanted to make sure that we put together all the right pieces to be able to accelerate.
That's wonderful. Speaking of innovation, we'd love to understand kind of what form it takes. Can you talk a bit about those innovation activities and maybe some examples of those?
Absolutely. I think that the company has really been working towards a different role in the housing finance industry ever since the housing crisis. We really see ourselves as central to the entire ecosystem around housing, and that's given us a different sense of responsibility around needing to be resilient, having to be secure, and ensuring that we're helping the industry advance in ways that reduce cost and reduce risk for everyone. Hmm. And so a lot of our innovations are really around just that, reducing cost, reducing risk, ensuring sort of more resilient operations overall. I think of one of my favorite innovations that we've had in recent years was called the Collateral Underwriter. And that, to me, was an absolute gem of a lesson learned coming out of the housing crisis. One of the biggest problems that we had was there just was low quality data around home appraisals. And since collateral is one of the more important parts of our lending strategy, it became really vital for us to get great collateral information. So as we looked at our vast history of appraisals, we realized we have now almost 30 million home appraisals in our database, and we can use some really great analytics to be able to determine what we think the right valuations are for homes, and we're not so singularly dependent on a one-time point-of-view appraisal. And the great thing is we've made this tool, the Collateral Underwriter, available to all of our lenders, so they can also see what the values are of these properties before they put the loans in, which means that we've now moved all of the risk management upstream to where it should be at the beginning of the process instead of at the end, and it makes it a lot easier for everybody to make good loans.
That's really interesting. And in terms of innovation, how is innovation organized? As I understand it, there's an enterprise innovation team. Your organization also gets involved in innovation. Certainly, I'm sure the business units weigh in on opportunities that they foresee. Can you talk a bit about how that works?
Yes, of course. I mean, I'm a big believer that good ideas come from everywhere. You can't have one central innovation group that holds on and owns it. It has to be part of the fabric of what the company does. And so we have certainly a team that helps to foster that. They bring in some partnerships and help people launch some pilots. But we also have terrific things like innovation days and all kinds of hackathons to try and get people all over the company coming up with new ideas and bringing some innovative opportunities. And that's been a wild success. The employees love it. We've gotten some terrific sort of seed ideas that we're looking to expand and bring into production. And it's really changed the nature of how we do things every day.
That's really interesting. You mentioned at the outset the various areas that are under your purview, and I'm wondering how your team is organized. Do you have, in the different disciplines that you mentioned, a leader over each of those, or are most of your leaders, like you, people who span a diverse array of topics?
Yeah. No, I'm very fortunate to have stepped into a role that had a lot of good leaders in place. So I do have leaders for each of those teams, but we are looking at bringing people together to collaborate a little bit differently. One of the things that that we've launched recently with our partners in our single family business is called the digital operating model. And this is a terrific way of doing software development where we have the business owners and product managers and the technologists co-located, working together jointly on teams in an agile methodology to really start delivering things in a more reliable and faster fashion. And we found that what we do deliver is much better received if there's really cooperation in the creation. So it's been a terrific way of doing it. And we're thinking about how to bring that collaboration across all areas of our tech stack.
That's great. Now that you're 5 or 6 months into your role, I wonder if you could talk a bit about your strategy, how that's emerged, some of the things that you and your team are working on. You mentioned a few things, but we'd love to understand a bit more about what you have planned.
Absolutely. And our strategy is still in progress. 5 months in a brand new role, you're still doing a lot of listening. I was on a very extensive listening tour internally and externally, trying to understand what the right trends are and how the industry is moving. I think that digitization, of course, is going to drive where the mortgage market goes. We are principally an insurance company, and there is a lot of information that we can gather, and that really is data dependent. And it depends on the right quality of data. It depends on the timeliness of data. And there's lots of data out there that you can bring together to come up with new insights and actually manage your insurance business in a way that's a little bit safer, but also is looking at brand new, innovative ways to do it. So in terms of digitization, I think that's going to be a key part of the strategy. And of course, the connectivity to the business. Having innovation, even having technology that's not in service of a business outcome, doesn't make a lot of sense. And so ensuring that everything we do connects back to the business strategy is our number one priority right now.
That's really interesting. You also, you've been with the company roughly 12 years. You've had a great number of sets of responsibilities during that time. They've included, you were the SVP of Multifamily Capital Markets and Pricing. You were the Chief Credit Officer, immediately preceding your current role, the Chief Risk Officer. And, there are a lot of people who, as they, in their career, have the same sort of role at multiple companies. But you've been, for a long period of time, multiple roles in the same company. And I'm wondering what advantages that have provided you by having all a variety of different seats now as your responsibilities have grown?
No, I think that's a terrific question. And variety is definitely a theme of my career. I started out working at a hedge fund and moved into an investment bank, eventually to a GSE. And you're right, in 12 years here, I've had 7 different roles. And I've been responsible for, you know, trading desks. I've been responsible for generating revenue. I've been responsible for our credit guarantee business that led to becoming our chief credit officer and eventually our chief risk officer. And I think some people would wonder, how do you make a leap from the chief risk officer to the chief operating officer? How do you get your arms around all of the technology aspects that come with that? And what's really fascinating is coming out of the crisis, we definitely had an emphasis on managing our credit risk, managing our liquidity and our market risk, and all of those things are essentially important all the time. But over the last decade, we've also seen a real increase in attention around cybersecurity and information security. We've been looking at our sort of data risk and thinking a lot around operational risks as well. So in that CRO role, I got a really great exposure to some things that were top of mind and emerging throughout that time. And as we got deeper and deeper into looking at things like cyber and data, we began spending some time imagining, if we created these tools and products with security in mind at the beginning, as opposed to trying to come at the end and secure the things we've built, would we do it any differently? And I think that kind of a mindset does really help bridge the difference between risk and operations, and potentially with our business strategy.
Yeah. And I'm also curious, we talked a lot about innovation prior to the conversation about risk. Yeah. And in many ways, innovation is about risk taking. And so determining what your risk tolerance is. And I'm curious, having had such a depth of experience in the topic of risk, and now turning your attention more with even greater focus on innovation, what the one role has lent to the next in terms of your own thought process about risk tolerance and its role in innovation?
That's right. I after 5 years at the head of the risk seat, I definitely spend more time thinking about how to articulate a risk tolerance. Most people have a risk tolerance, but they don't spend a lot of time thinking about what it is and how to communicate it and how to get other people aligned around it. And so using examples really helps. Using what-if scenarios helps too. But those tools that you can build as a risk officer really help to define exactly where you're willing to go and put the boundaries around what you're going to do to pursue the kinds of things that you're trying to achieve.
Hmm. If you look at your peers as COOs, especially across companies of comparable size and complexity as this one, very few of them are women. And so you are in some ways breaking through a ceiling that may be there still. And I'm curious, you know, what's your own thought process about the growth of women in executive roles? What progress has been made, and, you know, maybe some lessons from your own experience?
No, I don't really think about the ceiling breaking, but I do really enjoy what I do every day. And I think that is key to being successful in each successive role. You have to figure out what it is that you like about the job and what you can bring to it and how you're going to do it in your own special way. And there's every opportunity for women to really move into roles that aren't traditionally seen as female-oriented. I find that from the time I was trading in the derivative space or working in hedge funds or investment banks or even in risk, it doesn't have to be male or female characteristics that define how we do our jobs. At the end of the day, it all comes back to people. And everything we do through people. So if you can figure out how to connect the people to the work, I think it opens up all kinds of avenues. I had a terrific conversation just at the RSA conference earlier this year because there were lots of questions around why are there so few women in cybersecurity? And the conversation was all around the pipeline. People were saying, if we start now and we go and we get people out of college and we do the training, in 20 years we're going to have a fantastic, you know, array of women within the industry. And I don't want to age myself, but I've been working just a little longer than 20 years. I would say that 20-year strategy doesn't seem to work. I don't think you can start at the beginning of the pipeline and build it over time. I'm personally a believer that you need to build your pipeline at every stage along the way. I think that in the non-traditional female roles in the technology space and the risk space and in others, you can find terrific women everywhere. And you can bring people in laterally to learn new functions, to learn new roles. People have the ability to grow and expand their skill sets. You just have to look for folks who are ambitious, courageous, willing to take some risks. And those things are all learnable. So I would love to see more effort to build the pipeline throughout career levels, not just at the beginning.
That's a really interesting insight. Thank you for sharing that. I also wanted to ask you, as I mentioned before, you've been with the company for about a dozen years and obviously seen a tremendous amount of change across that time. I'd be interested in just your own reflection of how the organization has changed across your tenure with the organization, but also looking forward, sort of where you see the company expanding or growing.
I have. In the last 12 years, I feel like I've worked at three different companies. Our sort of post-crisis, during crisis and pre-crisis identity has been really, really different. And it goes back a little bit to what I was saying before around our perception of our place in the housing industry. Most companies are trying to win, but we've realized that we have a bigger cause. We're not just trying to win for us. We're trying to win for everyone. And finding ways to create more accessibility to home ownership, creating better communities that people can live in, and just trying to ensure that the entire ecosystem is functioning better is a really interesting game to try and win versus just trying to be successful in pumping out more MBS. And so for that, I think that we've really energized our workforce around doing things differently than we used to do, having a broader perspective, having a lot more awareness of our impact as we touch others. And that's one of the things that I've really come to learn in my role, that you can have terrific ideas and you can even put them in place, but it's how others are going to interact with the products that you design. It's bringing in all aspects of the industry, from the largest bank to the smallest independent, and making sure that what you're doing is a good fit for everybody. So for us, it's around making those steps forward and advancing, but doing it in a way that's accessible to everyone in the industry and trying to really enable better business practices all throughout.
That's great. I wanted to also ask you a bit about trends. As you look to the future, say 2 or 3 years out, what are some things that are starting to make their way on your personal or your professional roadmap that are particularly exciting you?
Yeah, I mean, for us, and if I think about the evolution of Fannie Mae, the recognition that we serve sort of at the behest of our customers is an important revelation. So everything we do is embedded with a customer perspective. And that also brings in fresh ideas and new thoughts around where things are going. In terms of the technology trends, they're the average ones that everybody, bumps onto. You can talk about cloud and you can talk about, big data. And of course, all those things are there. But I think that there's application of those that can be much more targeted, that are the types of things that can really help launch the company to a different place. Like when I think about the fact that we do have a tremendous amount of data, and that data provides us with all kinds of opportunities to really analyze the dynamics that we see occurring and the day-to-day changes in the marketplace. And if we can not just look at what's happening now, but move to a more predictive analysis, there's lots of things that you could do differently. We wouldn't have gone through the housing crisis if we had terrific data and better predictive analytics. And so using those kinds of capabilities to further our business model in the future, that's going to be where we're really focused. Another trend I'm really keen on is what we've been seeing in the green financing space. Fannie Mae has really taken note of the fact that having environmentally conscious products is an important thing for us to do. And so in 2015, we launched some of our green financing of multifamily bonds, and that really embeds incentives for apartment owners to create energy efficiency within their buildings. And that has taken off. The demand for our green products has been terrific. We've seen the growth over 2 years go from $400 million in issuance to $31 billion in issuance. And the thing that's really inspiring about that is that the green concept as a driver of business means that we can find affordability in housing lots of different ways. If you think about it, taking energy efficiency and lowering costs for borrowers means that their all-in housing costs are lower, which means that they're actually safer borrowers, more likely to repay their mortgages, and we've actually lowered their all-in costs. So it's a terrific thing for us to be able to partner and drive energy efficiency as an affordability play and make better mortgages all around.
Well, Kimberly Johnson, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a great conversation. Thanks for sharing your insights a bit about your career and where things are going next.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please rate us on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please join me next week when my guest will be Kai-Fu Lee, the author of AI Superpowers, China, Silicon Valley, and the New World Order. You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.